Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 6th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today. We welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery returns, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. Give us a call if you have a gardening question. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show. Good to call early. Just be patient. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. It's time for another cracking edition of Gardening with Fred, Bob, Dale Isla, Greg, and you. It begins after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardeners are back. Are you ready? Are you ready for your gardening questions to be answered? Bob Graves is back. He's the co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is here, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Dale Isla Riggs is with us, the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. You have a question? This is your chance. 800-348-2551. I'm not going to guarantee you're going to get through later, so this is your chance. We have a few open lines. 800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Well, look what the cat dragged in. Bob Graves is back here. How are you, buddy?
I am great. And I just want to thank all those wonderful people at Albany Med for taking care of me for 4 weeks.
Well, we won't go into the great detail.
No, you don't want to know.
Well, it'll take up the whole show, for one thing. But I'm glad you're with us. You're looking good. Great to have
good.
You back. Dale Isla Riggs, what's happening at the Berry Patch?
We are buried in blueberries still, and we made it through last week's biblical rains without very much damage. We only got a measly 4 1/3 inches when our neighbors not too far to the west of us got up to 12 inches of rain. Yeah. So
incredible amount of rain. Even 4 is a lot. So did you have to take any preparations before that started?
Luckily, we did not, because most of our crops are grown in what I call protected culture, either under greenhouses or... Our blueberries came through great. We have this insect exclusion netting, which also diffuses rain and diffuses wind. So we could have had our whole blueberry crop laying on the ground, yeah. And we did not, because the rain was broken by the netting.
Outstanding.
We had 10 inches at the nursery, and we didn't have any damage.
There was a lot of rain.
Yeah. There was a lot of rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ground must have been fairly dry, because we'll get kind of a little mini pond in our backyard when there's heavy rain. It finally came, but much later than I thought. It had been pounding down for a long time.
Yeah, it had been real dry up to that. We needed it. I mean,
and
honestly,
it actually
I was
came
glad
down
to get
over
the
a
rain.
Fairly long period of time.
It did.
Too. That
it
was
did.
Not a 2 hour,
no,
5 inch thing.
No, it was a solid chunk of time on that.
And Fred, you made it through okay at the Landis Arboretum?
We did. Yeah, we were. In fact, like I said, we actually needed the rain. Things were dry, yeah. So we were thankful for it. And it didn't seem to have much washed out or you know anything like that. A little bit of wash out in the driveway, but very minor. And it wasn't a lot of wind, so no trees down.
No tornadoes this time.
And no tornadoes. And we're gearing up right now for our 5K race coming up. Not this weekend, but next weekend. August 15th, it's at 8 a.m., and registration's still happening on landisarboretum.org. It's our 20th year of 5K races at Landis Arboretum this year.
I have heard.
And I'm wearing a shirt here, sneak preview.
Is that rain or shine?
It's rain or shine, absolutely.
And what about mud? Listen, you can't predict that far out, but I've heard from people, and I haven't seen the long-term forecast, that next week is going to be pretty rainy.
Yeah, I mean, we've run them. Whether they're dry or whether they're really, really wet. A lot of the runners, it's cross country. So you're running through the woods, you're running on trails, you're running over roots. And a lot of times, honestly, the mud adds to the excitement.
Now, you've done this several years, right?
The 20th year this year, our 20th year.
When it's muddy, does that affect the wagering?
It doesn't help the run times, let's put it that way. But it does for some people. Some people actually prefer it. It gives them an edge.
You know, cross-country people run in anything.
But they run in anything.
I was a sprinter. I don't run in the rain.
No.
No, you don't run in the rain.
My father was a mudder. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Gardening Today. We have some emails at voxpopwamc.org. Before I get to that, Dale Isley, you always bring stuff. Sometimes it's berries, looks like little tomatoes now. And then you have a jar with some bilious-looking water in it. What is this?
Yeah, so this is a trap for spotted-winged Drosophila, which is an invasive insect pest that arrived in New York in the fall of 2011.
Is that right?
Yeah, 2011 probably came in on Irene and Lee. Wow. But most of us didn't know that it was here until 2012, when we lost 40% of our blueberry crop to it. This is the reason that we have enclosed our entire half-acre planting in this fine mesh netting. But I just brought it in because normally it's in high populations by this time of year. And this year it's coming, it's building up a little bit later and a little bit slower. But people that have fall raspberries still want to think about it and protect their crop from it. And so what home gardeners can do is, this is a commercial trap that is red on the outside and has three spots with three little holes where the insects can fly in. I hang a pheromone lure, an attractant, inside. But if a home gardener wanted to just take a cup and put some red tape around it, because they are attracted to red.
All insects?
Spotted wing in particular. Hmm. Some insects are attracted to red, some yellow, some blue.
Yeah, some is different. When they were looking for emerald ash borer, it was purple traps. These weird purple traps. Yeah. And then with the Asian longhorn beetle, we had them at the Arboretum for a while. Not the beetle, but the traps. They were black. With pheromone, similar to pheromone.
Yeah. So, but a home gardener, you don't need the fancy lure. All you need to do is make a few little holes around the top of the trap and then put some vinegar in the jar and add like one drop of dish soap, just so if the flies fly in, they can't get off the water and fly back out. Spotted winged Drosophila is a type of fruit fly. So just like the fruit flies that fly around your bananas in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. And they're all in a family called vinegar flies. So they will get attracted to that vinegar, and you can collect them in the jar. You're not going to control them, but at least you'll know if they're in the area. And if they are, you want to pick your fruit on a regular basis and get it into your refrigerator right away.
A lot of people think that traps are controls, like Japanese beetle traps. They're not. They're for monitoring.
Right.
Interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. To see if they're
Japanese, there. You know, people come in and want Japanese beetle traps, and no. It doesn't really. It'll tell you got them, but it's not going to get rid of them.
No, and actually, some cases, it could even bring them to you. Yeah. It can actually bring them to you because now there's a pheromone in there, so if they weren't around the area. So, used in the right spot, they're really good, though. And a monitoring tool is usually the way it's.
And I actually have, there's six spotted winged Drosophila in here. They're tiny, 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 and certainly people obviously can't see them. But basically, probably 50 of these would fit on my thumbnail how small they are.
Yeah.
So, and it's just the males that have the spots on the wings. The females are a little bit larger in size. They have red eyes, and they have an ovipositor. What they lay their eggs with, that literally looks like a serrated knife.
Wow.
So that you can see it with a hand lens.
And these little things can ruin a blueberry crop.
A blueberry crop, a strawberry crop, a raspberry crop. Raspberries are their favorite.
No kidding.
Yeah. And we've counted as many as 22 larvae in one raspberry.
It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Greg Ward, I thought he was coming, but I've been on vacation myself, and I wasn't here for the scheduling. And Greg is not here today, just in case you're scoring at home. James writes in, wild strawberry plants are invading my Canadian roses. Is this a symbiotic plant relationship?
Symbiotic? I don't know about that. In general, I'm not convinced that they are going to be all that competitive. But if they are a plant that is out of place or in a place you don't want it, then that would be considered a weed. And you could smother them to get rid of them.
Smother them. Okay. Yeah. Just with what?
Black weed mat.
Okay. And the second question from James, how can the large, tall, flowering blossom of the hens and chickens plant be used to propagate more plants?
In general, hen and chicks, you take a cutting,
break off a piece.
You break the piece off, you put it in some media, they root pretty readily.
Almost can't keep it from rooting.
Yeah, you have a hard time not rooting it. You know, some things we talk about using different types of rooting hormones to get roots going, but with hen and chicks.
I mean, that's the whole point. It's a hen with a bunch of chicks. You break off a chick, you put it on some soil, and there you go.
And it goes, yeah.
Ring-a-ding-ding.
So just stick it in soil, and you'll leave it in there, water it, and you'll have more.
All right, this is from Nick. Should I wait a couple of months to move a neglected Japanese maple? And what's their ideal location? 1-inch diameter trunk cut to the ground with like 10 leaves.
Yeah, wait.
Melon-sized root ball.
Definitely wait.
Do not do it now.
No, you want to get the dormant season. They're going to move best when they're not actively growing. So fall would certainly work. Wait till the majority of the leaves are off. The ground's still diggable.
Yeah.
The rule of thumb with deciduous plants that lose their leaves is move them before they have leaves or move them after the leaves come off.
That's a good rule.
Because if you move them now, they're terribly stiff. You know, I've done it and gotten away with it, but I don't recommend it.
Yep. Just try to get the biggest root ball as you can on it. And, you know, generally they're wide, not so deep. And the main thing that I see people make errors with is that when you relocate them, they have to match the grade. So measure the hole twice. Dig once. Make it the exact same grade or a little bit higher, but not any lower. That's one of the reasons why a lot of transplants don't work.
I had an interesting conversation one time with a gentleman who had a nursery in Pennsylvania called Red Maple Nursery. He had provided a lot of the Japanese maples on the White House grounds.
Huh. Oh, wow.
And he told me on larger Jap maples, when they move them, they mark on the trunk northeast, south, and west,
and orient them
the same way.
You're kidding me.
When
Why?
They plant them, because
wow.
that bark
absolutely
is tougher on the side that gets more wind.
Right. Amazing. If you're putting the shade side directly in the sun, then that's going to be more susceptible to potential damage. And that's when sometimes we get calls and they say, my bark is split. People call them frost cracking. But that's usually what happens. Right. It's kind of like sunburn. And you can also sunburn them, too.
You can sunburn them. The winter is the worst.
But that's a really good little tip.
All right, let's take a quick break here. It's gardening. We'll get to the phones in a moment. We'll check the email later. Don't worry. 800-348-2551 is the number. Hey, a little marquees, a little underwriting. We'll see you on the other side. One light is out. I keep nodding to Mike to turn the mic. Yeah, I see that. The on-air light is out there. But it's on over here, and now we're on the air, and oh, what a mess. Bob Graves is here, Fred Bregley, and Dale Isla Riggs. It's gardening today, and let's jump right to the phones before anything else happens. Michelle in Danbury, Connecticut. Michelle, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I have 3 8-year-old, 9-year-old box Kuja dogwoods. They have begun to tip, and the pale yellow and to brown. What's going on? I got very few blossoms this year, and there are no red berries as yet.
Okay.
Is it too early for them to be turning brown?
Yes.
They get sun all the time.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. So how big are these plants, and how long have they been in the ground? Just curious.
9 years.
9 years. And did you plant them, do you know, or were they planted by a landscaper?
Yes, I had them planted. I didn't do it myself.
All right.
So, I mean, they looked fine up until this year.
Yep. So one potential option, a couple of things that could be the culprit, and I'll have you verify these. If not now, you can verify them later. But one is sometimes plants, we just mentioned about plant transplanting things, you know, moving things. We want to match the grade. So if you see the trunk on these trees and where it comes down and hits the root system, you should see it flare out right at ground level. And if you see that trunk kind of going straight in the ground, that tells me that it's probably too planted too deep. The other option is you might see part of the root flare, in other words, where the trunk meets the roots, and maybe it's flared on one side, maybe it's not on another. It could be a girdling root in there as well. So 9 years, that's kind of the common age where plants will do really good for a while, even if they have problems, and then they get to be 9, 10, 12, 15, 17 years old, and they start to show those underlying issues.
I'm seeing Kusas suffer from fungal diseases this year, too.
Okay, so it could also be a fungal.
Dogwoods got hurt this year, I think, because of the wet weather early.
Yep.
So it could be nothing more serious than that. If it loses all of its leaves, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a disaster.
Not at this time of the year.
Not this time of year.
Oh. No. The other thing you might want to do is look at the base and see if there's any signs of vole damage.
Yeah.
Because with the snow last year, we've had damage on dogwoods at our place from voles feeding during the winter.
Yep.
So that's something to look for as well.
All right, Michelle, thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia. Joan is in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Hello there, Joan. You're on.
Oh, I'm so glad you're taking my call. We recently removed a 70-plus-year-old sugar maple from the front of our house. Bad structural damage with storms and all. Read a lot lately about the environmental benefits of planting oak trees. So we're considering a northern red oak to plant that maybe sometime in late September. But I have a couple of concerns. I'm getting a lot of conflicting opinions on it. The first is location. The tree would be planted in an area, full southwest exposure, bordered by a semicircular brick walk and a paved driveway. The area is about 24 by 30 feet. It's about 24 feet from our house. And we understand the tree's feeder root system would naturally extend beyond this area eventually. Would it make sense for us to install, it's a high-density polyethylene root barrier system before planting the tree?
So all good questions. And arborists and landscapers do use root barriers to prevent them from, you know, migrating to areas you don't want them to. They will get big red oaks. You know, it's going to get so just be aware that, you know, that tree is going to be huge over time. And a lot of times, another little trick, so root barrier, yes, you could do that, especially if you don't want them to get into those areas that you had mentioned. Another trick is installation size. So there's a lot of research done on what size trees are best. And a lot of times folks think that, you know, bigger is better. And sometimes it is the case, but not always. And with the case of planting trees, there's a sweet spot between 1 inch, right around a 1 inch, 1 1/4 inch tree. Shows the most initial growth after it gets established. The bigger trees take a lot longer to establish. So if you got a 4-inch or 5-inch caliper trunk size red oak versus a 1-inch caliper red oak trunk size, in 5 to 7 years, that 1-inch will be larger than that 5-inch would be. And they're cheaper, they're easier to install. So a lot of times, you know, that's that sweet spot, that 1 to 1.5 inch caliber. So I would recommend that sort of size.
Okay, Joan.
Is that, even though those smaller trees are in local nurseries, I've found them in pots rather than burlap bags.
That's all right.
All right, so there's, you know, three main ways that trees are planted. They're bald mm-hmm. and burlapped, which means that and they all have advantages and disadvantages. There's bare root and then there's container. Bald and burlap, it's harvested, so it has a certain amount of root loss, which is another reason why that 1-inch caliber tree does well, because if it's harvested, it's losing less roots. If it's a 5-inch caliber tree, how much feeder roots did that tree just lose? And how much of it just sort of sits there. And that's a big reason why that transplant shock occurs. If it's containerized, that's okay too. But again, the smaller tree means it's been in the container less time and less likely that the roots begin to circle it. And circling roots are not good. And I would also advocate that you, you look at a trunk that's a nice straight leader. There's a good resource called treesaregood.org. It's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, and it gives great, you know, planting and pruning advice. But you want a nice straight leader, and you're going to want to maintain that straight leader over the course of the next decade.
And what we do with container trees now, and this has developed over the last decades, is you separate the roots out. So you may go in and cut them. You may go through and just peel them back, but you sort of open up that root mass so that they don't turn into girdling roots as easily.
That's right. Yep. If you see them turning, straighten them or cut them.
Cut them.
Because long term, short term, first decade, not a huge problem. The next 20, 30 years, major decline, major issues.
Joan, thank you very much for the call. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, our number. Mary's in Amsterdam. Hello, Mary in Amsterdam.
Hi, this is Mary. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I have old blueberry bushes. I called on them once before. They did terrible this year. They're probably 70 years old. And the blueberries are finished. I wonder if I can go ahead and prune them back now since they're dormant. And then they're infested with that bishop weed, and I wondered how I can get rid of that. And I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mary. Go ahead, Delilah.
Yeah, I would not prune them now. Pruning is in just after they have finished producing is not a good idea. You want to do it when they're fully dormant. You would not want to do it until after Thanksgiving. Sometime after Thanksgiving until early April is the time to prune blueberries. And they are big and old, so you could do some pretty significant pruning. You could take up to 50% of that plant out. I routinely, on my plants, which are 30 years old, I routinely take out 33 to 50% of the plant each year, depending on the variety. Focus on taking out the biggest canes and leaving the smaller canes, and try to really bring them back into check over a 2 to 3 year period. But definitely do not do it now, because you will be taking all the nutrients from that plant and taking them away, and they may not come back very well next year.
So after Thanksgiving would be the first day you could do it.
Exactly.
Right, and then like usually like all up to like spring, like you said, before they start to grow.
Yep.
At that
early
point,
April.
They've taken the energy that they produced and stored it, so they're not losing it.
That takes
them a while to get it out of the branches into the root system.
Right, yeah. They're going to be sending their carbohydrates and sugars down to the root system in September and October so that they come back well next year. For weeds, I highly recommend a nice heavy mulch. And we actually use a black weed mat in most of our blueberry planting. You can put it down for a couple years, and that'll often take care of many of the weeds. We keep it between the rows in ours.
All
the time. Yep.
Recognizing the bishop's weeds is awful to get rid of.
It is.
Don't get discouraged.
Yep. Right.
The areas around the plants could be mowed, and bishop weed does not like to be mowed.
Yeah.
So if you can just mow it low, it goes away. But obviously within the trunks and around the actual plants, you can't mow that. So that gets a little bit trickier.
Yeah. So some judicious hand weeding right up against the trunk and in between the plants. Just I would put down some heavy duty weed mat and smother those weeds.
All right. Let's go to Newberg and Kat. Kat, you're on. Try it again. Kat, you're on. Newberg. Maybe that's not your name. What's your name? I'm talking to you. Hello?
Oh, yeah. Hi. Sorry. Kat.
Oh, it is Kat.
Newberg.
Oh, hi. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I've got about 26 beefsteak tomato plants, and I'm getting the lovely tomato blight where the leaves are speckled and you get the yellow all over your hands when you try to trim off the leaves. I've tried baking soda and Dawn. I've tried the peroxide spray, and someone told me about copper sulfate. So I was wondering, what's the best way to eliminate that?
Bob Graves.
Well, I'm going to defer to Delilah on this because I'm not a tomato grower.
Yeah. So when it comes to tomatoes, the first thing I would do is get some pictures or samples to your cooperative extension office and confirm exactly which tomato disease it is, because there are a lot of them out there. There's early blight, but you may also have some Septoria leaf spot, or you could have some bacterial leaf spot. And bacterial leaf spot, you could treat with copper sulfate. Copper is a good material to use for bacterial diseases. The fungal diseases, keep pruning it out and make sure that you cannot have anything splashing from your soil up onto the leaves. Some of the bacterial leaf spots are actually seed-borne, so like commercial growers will hot water treat their seed before they grow it. But I would get some positive ID of that disease first, and then you can make sure that you're using the best material for what you actually have.
Recognizing that the weather has a lot to do with these things in tomatoes.
Yes, and especially given the rains of last week,
a lot of rain.
So, and you may very well have multiple diseases. You may have some fungal diseases as well as bacterial diseases.
It's never good to assume that what you think it is what it is, because it may be a lot more than what you think it is.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds optimistic.
Would tomatoes be safe to eat at this point or no?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's not an edibility thing. It's just a disease cycle that we want to try to accurately ID so you can stop it.
And fungicides are generally preventatives, not eradicants. That is, once you've got a fungus, if it is a fungus disease, it's difficult to get rid of once it's there.
So one hint to look at also, if it's a bacterial disease, if it's bacterial spot, if you look at the green tomatoes and there's little tiny, tiny dots with like a white halo around them on the fruit themselves, that is a bacterial disease.
Uh-huh.
A fungal disease is not going to look that way.
And will that be bad if you eat those?
No, you can. I eat it all the time.
Okay, fair enough. Kat, thanks a lot. But if you're dumping copper sulfate on it, and these are tomatoes that you eat, that's okay too?
Well, you have to make sure you follow the label directions, which always have a pre-harvest interval that
you
can't.
A certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't harvest in between it. Copper sulfate is a material that organic growers use all the time on their crops. It's one of the approved organic materials that can be used. And it's in very, very small quantities. Mm. But again, like Bob mentioned, it's preventative.
And one of the things that I like to mention to folks is because it's organic, doesn't mean it's safe.
I like that.
We talk about this all the time. Yep. People say, well, I'm going to use vinegar for weed control. Yeah, you can't go in that area for 48 hours.
Oh, it can be quite dangerous. Yeah, that's strong, powerful
strong
stuff.
Strong vinegar,
This is not your apple cider vinegar that you use at home.
The most dangerous thing I ever sold was nicotine sulfate. It had a skull and crossbones on it, but it was organic.
Right.
Speaking of tomatoes, Dale Isla, before our break here, you brought some little tomatoes.
Cherry tomato season.
Beautiful.
Yep. We've got some Sun Golds, which are little, really sweet yellow tomatoes, and some chocolate sprinkles, which I think are absolutely beautiful, kind of bronzy with greenish stripes on them, a little bit firmer skin, some nice red sakuras. And then I think last year, everybody's favorite actually was the black cherry, which is a cherry tomato that's kind of purplish in color.
Look at Bob Graves just popped a whole tomato right in his mouth here.
Some of these are like candy. They're so sweet.
Well, let's tell you what. Let's grab a couple of emails here, and then we'll take a break, and then we will go back to the phones here on a gardening edition of Vox Pop. And this one is from Anthony. Subject heading, hot lips, not so hot anymore. We bought a hot lips salvia about a month or two ago. It had bright red flowers for the first 6 weeks. It attracted hummingbirds. All of a sudden, new blossoms were white, not red. What gives? We tried repotting, top dressing with a very small amount of compost and holly tone. No luck. Help. Two exclamation points.
Mine are doing the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. You know, this may be a plant that's really great for a while and then maybe not so great after a while. It's one of the new ones. Obviously, with that kind of name. I don't think I did anything wrong. It's just the weather,
okay.
I guess. Yeah.
So it may not happen next year if we have a spot of good weather?
You know, again, some of these plants that come out and they're new and everybody says this is the greatest thing there ever was, sometimes it's not.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes they're also grown inside of greenhouses and they do really, really well when they're under control, but then you put them outside.
Mine
it's not the same
great,
environment right? anymore.
Mean, the hummingbirds were all over mine, and now it's kind of like, they're not that interesting.
Do you think the hot weather that we had a month ago might have affected it?
Could have, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I think I'm not going to mention the brand, but it could be one of those ones that's not as great as they think it is.
Okay, I'm glad you're not mentioning a brand. You get a little gold star from our legal department. That's nice. Pete in Delmar writes in, hello. Recently, part of my front yard had to be dug up. The yard is comprised entirely of plants for wildlife. I have Echinacea, Monarda, Rudbeckia, Joe Pye, and some other of the usual suspects. Considering the new open ground and suggestions to increase diversity, plants need to be fairly self-sustaining, not necessarily native, and that's from Pete.
Well, you got a bunch of good ones right there. I'd be inclined to propagate or let them take over. A lot of times, like Rudbeckia will take over an area just if you leave it alone.
Yeah, I might add some lupins.
Yes.
Lupins are nice. Penstemon is one of my favorites. Those would be really nice to add as well. And the hummingbirds absolutely go crazy over them. But yeah, like Bob says, that's a pretty good mix as it is. You know, lupins will often, some of them will self-seed as well, so they'll kind of self-propagate. Yeah.
Baptisia is another one. You can add to that, you know, another one you can add to it.
What's the trick with lupins? We had lupins one year. They were beautiful, but then they never reseeded themselves.
Aphids really like them a lot. So if you're not, if you don't, you know, a lot of times when I see lupins just kind of, they're not doing great. They're loaded with aphids and you don't really see them unless you really look close. That, I know that's sometimes the problem. Certain varieties too do better than others.
Yeah. The other thing with lupins is when you think of where they're native to, like high mountains, they like cooler soil. Mm-hmm. So if they're in a spot that the soil stays really hot, some nice thick mulch to keep the roots cooler will
interesting.
Help.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. It's 800-348-2551. Some more marquees, a little underwriting, and then back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isla Riggs. And Dale Isla, the tomatoes are incredible. The chocolate sprinkles, really interesting. And then the sun gold is so sweet.
Ridiculously
heavens.
Sweet.
And then I tried a black cherry as well. I didn't try the fourth one. What is that?
Oh, the Sakura.
Sakura.
A nice red one.
All right.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what. I can't really read and eat the tomato at the same time. So let's read, and then you answer, and I'll try this last one. James writes in, it's me, Jim, from Gilderland. All right, Jim, it is. We have an area between two planting beds I'd like to turn into a wild plant area so I can stop mowing and weeding. Good idea. I'm hoping to help the birds and the bees at the same time. Any suggestions for the plants would be appreciated. Plant them, forget them is the goal. Jim is a genius. Can you help him?
Well, just don't mow it.
Well, that's usually my mantra.
Take care of itself. Yeah. Oh, you could plant all kinds of different things there, whether you want to do shrubs and perennials or a mixture. You know, there's bird food and there's hummingbird food, and it just, you got all kinds of options there.
Yeah, but, certainly. I would just do a whole mix of perennials.
Yeah.
This year, we kind of focused on ones that hummingbirds and butterflies really go for. And you know, it sounds like if you don't want to mow, that's kind of what you're looking for as well. So I would just there's so many different options. Go to one of the local nurseries and kind of choose your theme and go from there.
Find what you like in that one.
Yep, I would agree.
All right. One more email for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. By the way, the Sakura, very nice. I think my winner is Sun Gold, and maybe second is the chocolate sprinkles. Well, Bob's going to have some more.
I got to try them all.
Yeah, they're good, man. All right, Polly Alita writes in, suggestions for native shrubs to replace spirea. South-facing average soil, spirea hides the view of our air conditioner unit. And that's from Polly Alita.
Again, a lot of options on that.
A lot of options.
I mean, it sort of depends on the site. You know, is it shady? Is it sunny? Is it dry? Is it wet? We don't really know that information.
What I like to ask folks and that sort of thing is, how tall do you want it to
how
be?
Tall do you
how
want
wide
it?
Do you want it to be? You know, there's some viburnums that might be possible for that. Spirea certainly aren't the best.
Viburnum is what came to my mind. It seems there's a lot of options.
There's so many different viburnums. You can get them tall, you can get them short, you can get them white flower, you can get them with a red berry, a blackberry. Things like the dentatum, I think, is native.
Yeah,
they're
that's
easy
totally
to get
native.
Along with. We don't have the problem that we used to have with the viburnum leaf beetle.
And it's not.
Why is it gone now?
It's not gone, but it's not
an issue.
Not
like
an issue like it was. That was a real bad.
You know,
pest.
The guess is there's some predator or fungus.
That's
or
what
something
I'm thinking.
That's
controlled it.
So the plants themselves haven't evolved.
No, it hasn't been quick. It certainly wouldn't have been quick enough for that.
Often happens, even like with gypsy, or not gypsy moth, but spongy moth.
Spongy moth.
You know, they were a huge problem and still are some places, but some places they're not because there's a fungus that gets after them.
Yep, yep. There's some native hydrangeas, too. It's another really good
one.
Oh,
yeah. That would be great.
That would be another killer. Yeah. Again, just knowing a little bit more about the site, there's some really awesome, like, shrubs that are, like, I mean, you can get pinksters. We actually have some of those at our fall sale. Those are incredible plants.
What is your fall sale?
Weekend after Labor Day.
Okay. Even blueberries. September.
I was going to say, blueberries
is
another
nice shrub.
One. It is.
You know, if you're not worried about the berry, you don't have to cover them, but they're pretty. They got a nice fall color.
Yep. Yep. And there's a swamp azalea. Again, just really depends on the site, but there's a lot of stuff. So figure out, I would say, what your site is, how tall, just like what you said, how wide you want it, and how much light they're getting, and that's going to make a big difference. And then you start to select plants that'll fill that role. A lot of people make a lot of mistakes. I want this or I want that. Doesn't always work because wrong plant, you know, beautiful plant, wrong spot doesn't equals not a long-lived plant or a problem plant.
Gardening today on the show. It's 800-348-2551. David's in Troy. David, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm calling about an invasive species. I believe it's some kind of a wild rose. A very small white flowers, and for a long time there was just one plant on the edge of a lawn in a wooded area, no problem. Suddenly this year it exploded, interspersed itself and intertwined itself in an existing Coosa dogwood that's been here for years, and there's also two isolated very large plants, very large shrubs of this thing. Has very nasty, sharp thorns, if you will. Someone suggested using a mixture of salt and vinegar and water to try to kill it, but I don't know if that did any good. And then by the end of its growing season, the flowers disappeared. The nasty thorns almost softened and all but disappeared. Okay. Does that ring a bell, and how can I get rid of this?
Okay.
Again, it had only been isolated on the edge of a lawn, and suddenly it was all over the place.
All right.
I think Fred would agree. I need to go in there and cut it.
Yep, I would.
And cut it and cut it.
I've done that, and it's extremely difficult because it's so intertwined with this dogwood that I can't get down to the root.
Yeah, you've got – I mean, it's
– I've been cutting off what I can easily access.
Right. So it will take some diligence to get in there, but cutting it is going to be the solution. Getting in, cutting the pieces out, dissecting it, and pulling them all apart. Have you leather gloves when you're working with that guy. And then make your way down to its root system. And then if it's, I mean, assuming it's got to be a little bit of a distance away from your dogwood, in which case, if you could even cover that sort of nub when you get to it. And cover it with some black plastic and put a couple of rocks.
It's very difficult to do because it's so intertwined and the dogwood is very thick. So I can cut it to a certain point, almost to the root, but not to the root, where I'd have to cut everything down.
And the dogwood.
Any reason why it would suddenly start spreading like that?
Well, it's an invasive. It sounds like rugosa rose.
Yeah,
and
Some wild.
But it could be just a wild rose.
Wild roses. You know, I've got some.
But again, if for many years it was just at the edge of a lawn in the woods, I thought, oh, fine. It looks nice.
Yeah.
Then suddenly it's all over the place.
You missed your opportunity to control it.
Yeah, but you could still beat this, though. Like I said, it's just, you know, when you say dogwood, I'm assuming because it's not easy to get to, that must mean it's a multi-stem shrub type dogwood.
Yeah, it's been around for many years. I bought it as a little tiny two-pronged thing.
Right.
A two-pronged thing. I pruned it, and it's a wonderful shrub, but now it's gotten too big in general. Mm. And that makes it more difficult to reach the roots of this, rose.
We've gotten to the point sometimes where we used a bulldozer or an excavator. I mean, just
do you have one of those, David?
Well, not yet, okay. But I think I may have to take the damn dogwood now. Which I hate to do.
Well, that's an option.
It's kind of a friend that it's been there for years, and I pruned it and learned that pruning, in fact, does work. But now it's become a monster.
You're going to have to trace that to the root of the problem. And you will get it, but you might even have to prune out some of the dogwood to get to it. And you know, if you leave a lot of the dogwood there, it's going to recover. So be persistent, you will win.
Gardening today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll go over to Troy and talk to Liz. Hello, Liz.
Yes, can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm gonna take you off a speaker there. Okay. I have a Harry Lauder walking stick tree, and I know there's a different name for it, but Corallus avellana contora,
good
I
job.
Think it is.
Easy for you
but
to
anyway.
You passed the test. Good job.
Okay. So I've had this for many years, and it started out as what I thought was going to be just a shrub type thing, but it's grown into a massive shrub. I see online that you can trim it to where it, you can trim all the bottom branches and almost make it look like a little umbrella type tree. But I don't necessarily want to do that. So question is, how can I cut it back and get it under control? And what time of year should I do that?
And you're still seeing the really twisted branches of this contorted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sometimes the root systems
really
will revert.
Lovely.
Yep. So any straight ones.
And I do trim out the straights.
Okay. So if it's getting too big and you want to control the size, what we want to do is whether it's too wide or too tall, the same concept. It's called reduction pruning.
A little of both.
Yep. So you want to do reduction pruning, which basically consists of taking the larger part of the plant off to a designated height, and with those kind of plants, I generally don't do more than 25% at a single pruning session because they're a little more sensitive, and you're going to cut away the larger part and cut back to a smaller part, a smaller branch, and when I say that, you don't want to take a really large branch and cut it back to something like, you know, if it's a 2-inch branch, you don't want to cut it back to like a size of a pencil. You would want to try to cut something that back to something that's maybe 30% the size or larger. So a smaller branch, cut it back, and you do that over the, you know, from the top down and from the sides in. And with that type of reduction pruning, you should be able to control the size. There's some good diagrams on that treesaregood.org website that I had mentioned earlier. And it'll show you reduction pruning concepts.
When would you suggest she do that?
Summer pruning, you could do that. You know, 25%, you could do that right now.
Yeah, because it can heal. Yeah, it's time to heal.
Yeah, you could do that right now. So just not more than 25%. And I wouldn't get it too late in the fall. So if you are going to do it, now is kind of the later part of what I would do. If it gets into September, October, it's too late.
Recognize there is a disease that goes after that plant. If it starts
to
decline on you really quickly, you may have the disease.
Yeah, but if it looks healthy, you're in good shape right now. So, yep.
I would just say when you do the pruning, look at the weather forecast, and you don't want to do it before it's going to be a rainy period.
Why is that?
Yeah, just because rain, if there's any of the fungal disease around, it will help the fungus infect the plant.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb. I don't ever prune right around rain or during rain.
It's been a little hard this year to do that.
You gotta plan accordingly.
All right, it's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isler Riggs. This email from Eunice, very, very succinct. Ask them for help with wild parsnip and with milkweed. Don't want to decimate the area, and in my black caps as well. I have not exactly sure what I just read. Does anybody have an idea what Eunice is talking about?
I do. Okay. I do. I would say, mowing it, cutting it down. Poison parsnip, you definitely want to suit up. You know, it's photoreactive, so if it gets on your skin during a sunny day, it'll interact with the UV.
Now, when she says black caps, does she mean raspberries?
Black raspberries, most likely.
So you don't want to mow those necessarily.
Yeah, well, Eunice says that she doesn't want to decimate the area, so it's going to be tricky, right?
I'm assuming if it's a really weeded in area, it's going to be tricky. I mean, you might have to take things out to get it all. I don't know what we're dealing with, but, the parsnip, not a problem. The milkweed, not really a problem. We leave a lot of milkweed at the arboretum just because it's a good pollinator plant. Right. But if it's in a spot that you really don't want it, then, cutting these are real easy ones. But, parsnip, you want to suit up. It doesn't hurt to get the juice on you if you take a shower right away. So if you're,
How long does it take before it hurts you?
It'll take more than, usually you leave it on and you're out in the sun for a while. It's a big patch. You can get it.
Okay.
If you're cutting something the size of this room, I wouldn't really worry too much about it. I'd cut it, take a shower. But generally, I always use long sleeves when I'm cutting those poison plants. It's just protective. It's just smart.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines quickly here. We'll go to New Paltz. Sharon, you're on.
Hello. I've planted a weeping Japanese maple in April, and we had a frost in May. And now the leaves have been turning brown and falling off.
Well, I'm not sure that the frost necessarily had anything to do with that. My concern would be if it got dry, even though we've had a lot of rain. They don't like real sunny, windy spots where they're going to dry out because those leaves are so delicate, they dry out easily. Now, if there's any leaf left at all, if they're just kind of turning brown on the tips, they'll come back from that. If it's losing all its leaves, that is not a good sign.
No, and it did get really dry. I mean, so planting in April, there was a point there when we put a lot of plants in, and we were like, oh, my God, you know, how do we even keep? We'd water them 2 days later. They needed more water. Yeah. It was like all you can do to keep up
with
them.
That'd be the guess.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, too, especially if it said April installation. So if it's got a chunk of leaves on it, it'll probably come back, even if it lost, you know, part of the plant. But if the whole thing is bare, I don't know if we're talking about that or not, that's not good.
You're done.
Okay. All right, Sharon, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. To Claverick we go, and it's Abe's turn. Abe, go ahead.
Oh, yes, hello?
Hello, you're on.
Oh, okay. I put in this hollyhock plant last year, and I didn't realize at the time that it's supposed to take 2 years for the flower to come up. But now this is the second year, and there's still no flowers. And then in the meantime, it's like taking over the whole corner of the small garden. And also, yeah. Today I started stripping some of the huge leaves off of it because they're starting to brown. Some of them are getting brownish. And it's not an issue with water because I pretty much watered it okay. So what do you think? Should I wait another year or just remove it from the garden?
Yeah, they reseed themselves pretty prolifically. So yeah, I would just – there's nothing you're going to do now that's going to make it bloom. So you either wait till next year or you give up on it altogether, one or the other.
Okay. So any reason why it wouldn't bloom this year when it was supposed to?
Yeah, there's a myriad of factors. We don't know for sure what's going on there.
Does the plant itself look real healthy? Or not too healthy.
Well, it's crowded in there now because there was other plants. I didn't expect it to like mushroom out and take over a whole section there, but
it could be.
So it might be too crowded with some of the other flowers I put in there.
So competition, you
could
said?
Could be competition. Yeah, okay. With all the other plants that are there.
And the top of the plant looks like a straight up plant though, not like like something took the top out of it.
Yeah, we lost them.
Oh.
So there you go.
If you lost the top on it.
Could be that something else.
Something else, yeah.
Growing.
All right, this is from Betty in Wilbraham, Massachusetts, who said, I heard the instructions on pruning established blueberry bushes. Question, when I pick berries on mine, may I trim out dead bits? And that's from Betty in Wilbraham.
Yeah, if they're dead, it's certainly good to take them out now. Remove them from your planting in case it's an actual disease. You know, we don't know if it's an insect or a disease or drought or what might be killing it. But if it's dead, certainly take it out.
If it's dead material, you have to take it out now because later in the fall, you don't know whether it's dead or not. It's lost all its leaves.
Good point. Yep. And that goes with almost virtually every woody plant. If dead wood, you can take out anytime.
All right. Very quickly, Lee in Oneonta wants to know, cukes. I planted Marketmore cukes. Good first harvest. Then the morning fog came. Leaves are changing color. I'm using Soap Shield, liquid copper fungicide spray. Any other ideas very quickly, Delilah?
Some fertilizer, if it's not being fertilized on a regular basis. Cucumbers have a pretty high fertilizer requirement. So give it a shot of compost or some type of fertilizer, whether it be organic or non-organic, and see if it gets going again.
All right, we're out of time here. Delilah Riggs, how do people find the Berry Patch?
We are on Route 22 in Steventown and theberrypatch.net.
Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
Yep, at 174 Lape Road, Esperance, New York, and the website landisarboretum.org. And not this weekend, but next weekend, 5K. Starts at 8 o'clock.
Roger that. Bob Graves.
Fadigan's Nursery, 1140 Troy Schenectady Road, 3.5 miles west of the Northway, near the airport road.
Well, I see your convalescence did not affect the sonorous quality of your voice. Well done,
Let's
sir.
Hope not.
Welcome back, and thank you all for being here. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Support comes from Munson Museum of Art in downtown Utica, hosting its feature exhibition of the summer, Watercolor Stories, Art of Charles E. Birchfield, a collection inspired by nature. tickets and information at munson.art. Can't do that one. We'll have to put that on the descript sheet there, Mike Bowen. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Bob and Fred and Dale Isla. And thanks to all the folks who emailed as well. Mike Bowen, our engineer. Susie Checkeye, the call screener. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, oh, yeah, we welcome back a legend. Kizzy Williams will be with us. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.